Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning, my friends. Those of you who are healthy, I hope you are enjoying this day. Those of you who don't feel too well, I hope you are enjoying this day. But there'll be a difference in what you do today, of course. For those of you who don't feel well, I ask myself this question. I ask myself, after 2 decades of practice, what's the difference? And I constantly go back to this because it makes all the difference to me. What is it about the person that walks in and begins a healing that they finish, whether it's a year, a month, or 5 years later? And what is it about the person that spins? And so many people spin in their issues, in their symptoms. They spend a lot of money, a lot of time. They don't get what they need. And if there's one difference that tells me that a person's going to heal, it's the way they understand their disease or their symptom. It's their perspective on it. Perspective to me makes all the difference. And you see this all the time. People walk in. I had a bunch of those cases this week. People walk in and they're threatened with a surgery, and they walk in and they say, there's no way I'm getting this part of my body cut out. They just get that. I don't know what it is, why some people get that and some people don't, but the people that do are the ones that prosper. And you see this theme play itself out everywhere on these survivor shows. People write books on why people, when they're facing crisis in the wilderness, why some of them survive and some of them don't. Why some of them exceed themselves. To have an illness is to be asked, in a sense, to exceed yourself. To go to that higher you. The you know is there, that couldn't fully express. And now, your symptom or your disease is an adaptation. That's the theme of this show. Disease as adaptation. My job as a scientist is to bring you, the public, a better understanding of what we mean in the cell, in the organ, when we say disease is an adaptation. The cell adapts. We have to adapt. The cell is hit 10,000 times. I don't know. There's numbers out there that are in the thousands. And if we could pull a cell, the basic unit of life, out of an organ, and we could put it on a TV screen and watch it, you'd watch something amazing. You'd watch a cell hit thousands and thousands and thousands of times a second by the enemy, so to speak, by the stressor, by something that's not good for the cell. And you'd watch the cell mount continually a response to these stressors, and we'll get into some of those stressors today. And as the cell mounts its antioxidant against free radical, as it brings internal warriors to the microbe, to the virus, as the immune system goes after the parasite or the bacteria, as the lymphocyte spins up the antibody, and internally, as the cell sends out its own form of police to go after different internal cellular attack. And when the cell starts to lose that battle, when you start to see the cell come up on the short end of the stick to the infection, to the chemical toxin, to the heavy metal. What you start to see the cell do is change its shape. The cell morphs. The cell adapts on a deeper level. And as the cell adapts on a deeper level, it changes shape. It's a gross, visible shift in the way it looks to the world. What happens then is you sacrifice function for a change in the cell's structure. This goes on all the time. And this is what we call symptom. This is what we ultimately call disease. So what I want to do today is get you away from this idea that you've got a pain and it's a symptom and we got to get rid of it. I want to get you away. This takes discipline. It takes understanding. But that perspective will get you to cross the road to the other side. It's the perspective you have to evolve to. And we all know enough about the body to understand the cell. It's like a grape. It's got a skin called the membrane. It's got an internal system that we call the cytoplasm. And then the seed is where the DNA and the chromosomes and the genes of the cell are. So the cell's easy to understand. We've all had some discourse with that. So here's an example of a symptom or a disease as an adaptation. On the inner lining of your bronchial tubes, when you breathe in air, air goes down through the mouth into the oropharynx. It goes into the trachea. The trachea starts to break up into large bronchi and then small ones called bronchioles. And then we get to the alveolus of the lungs. And that's how air gets in when the air is dirty. So we'll talk a little bit about lung disease today. When the air is dirty, we have this cell on the inside of the bronchial, on the bronchus. Of the bronchioles. It's a cell. It's called a respiratory columnar cell. Columnar cell. And that cell's got hairs on it. Those cells have little hairs called cilia. And if you watch the inner lining of the bronchus and bronchioles, there are these little hairs that are sprouting out of these cells called columnar cells. And these little hairs push all the dirt out of your bronchus so you don't take it into the lung. Their job is this continual sweeping upward motion to trap and push different forms of chemical, etc., up and out of your lung. And that's sometimes why you cough or you have to spit up, expectorate. But that's what those cells do. They're a specialized cell that the body puts there to push away different types of particulates, poisons, things you don't want in your lung, bacteria. Now, what happens over a period of time, of years, if these columnar cells are stressed continually? Now, one great example, of course, is cigarette smoke, but that's not the only one. Secondhand smoke, working in industry where the air is just irritating the lungs all the time. What happens then as a result is that the cell, the respiratory columnar cell with the cilia, it morphs. We say it goes dysplastic. Dysplasia. Dysplastic is a word to describe what a cell does when it's getting hit too many times and finally it calls in the troops, it makes a decision, and the cell says, we've got to change shape. We've got to thicken our skin. We've got to find a way that we didn't really want to find, but we've got an environment now that we have to adapt to. And what in this case, which drives a lot of lung issues, what in this case happens is that the cilia fall off as the cell shifts to a squamous cell. The cell morphs. It changes its shape from a respiratory columnar cell to a squamous cell. Now, a squamous cell is a tougher cell, but it's a cell that doesn't have cilia. Now, this is an adaptation. It has to be understood as an adaptation. An adaptation means an environment forced a shift in a target, in this case, your cell. And once you lose those cilia, now you can't trap particulates as well. And the particulates, the bad smog, the garbage in the air, begins to build up deeper into your bronchioles now. It goes deeper because nothing traps it. Nothing brings it up and out of the body. When that begins to happen, when you can't get those particulates out, the immune system, your macrophages, your neutrophils, your lymphocytes, all of these cell warriors, cellular police forces that scan the body looking for bits of matter that don't belong there, they begin to attack the garbage trapped in the cell because those cilia are gone, because the body, the bronchus, the bronchioles have adapted to stress. And so now we build up these particulates and the immune system sees them. And we begin another adaptive response. We begin the beginning of inflammation. So look at that. Two adaptive responses. One, the cell morphs. It goes dysplastic. Later, we're going to talk about dysplasia all the way to cancer. But get the perspective. The body's just adapting. Other people say it's getting sick. Other people say, oh, darn it, I have a symptom now. I've got a real problem. It's not the way the body's looking at it. The body's simply saying, the environment you give me to try to handle demands a more radical adaptation. If you wouldn't do that, I wouldn't have to adapt this way. Just change the terrain or the environment. But look at what we do. We intercede that process and say, here's a drug. We may even say, here's an herb, which is always more positive, but it can come from the same defective mentality. Here's a body, a cell, something driven by the life force, simply saying, hey, change the environment so I don't have to adapt like this, and we're coming in. And we're saying, we're going to disregard that. We're going to get that problem. We're going to fix it. Now, of course, in some cases, an herb can help a process. But again, there's a deeper perspective here. And that perspective makes all the difference. Now, when we start this adaptive process that we call inflammation, now we have these particulates deep in the cell with the immune system beginning to mount their attack because they don't want those things there. The immune cells release chemicals, and those chemicals create an inflammatory response. And we talk about this all the time. Inflammation means more blood. You know that from a bee sting or a spider bite or any time you've been bitten by something that swells up a tissue. Blood surges in. All sorts of pain-producing chemicals, prostaglandins, thromboxanes, are produced, and they're produced to warn the brain via the nervous system that there's a problem there. So again, even the short-term acute inflammatory response is, in a sense, healthy adaptation. So look at a perspective now on the beginning of what's going to be an emphysema or a bronchiectasis. Look at the beginning of it. Bad air comes into a cell that has hair on it. The cell can't handle it, and so the cell simply loses its hair. It becomes a squamous instead of a columnar. Adaptation. Then those particulates get trapped deep in the lung fields, and the immune system attacks, as it should, and we begin an inflammatory response to, in a sense, adapt once again. The body's just sitting in there going, hey, I'm doing the right thing for you. Don't you get the point? So once this inflammatory response begins, and now these squamous cells and other cells mixed into that, like the cells that make up the elasticity of the lung, collagen, elastin, all sorts of mixtures of different tissues that we call the organ, they all sit in this inflammatory swamp with all these nociceptive chemicals, these pain-producing chemicals like prostaglandins, telling you you have a problem. Again, we could call the pain a healthy adaptation. It's telling you something's wrong. Tough to get this in a sense, right? When you're in pain, you just want it to go away. Understood, and we're certainly human. So this isn't a party when this is occurring. But how you act upon this and how you weather the storm and what you utilize to keep your faith in the healing is why you have to understand this lecture today. So once this inflammatory process hits a certain level, the tissues begin to lay down fibrin. There are cells in the body, fibroblastic cells, that begin to spin up a tissue called fibrin, a protein strand called fibrin. Fibrin is scar tissue. And as we start to inflame and lay down scar tissue, we start to create an environment that creates stasis, meaning nothing can move through it. And there is the cell, surrounded in all of this adaptive response, but losing function as a result. The cell is just adapting, but losing function. And now you feel it bad. And that's how you can look at bronchiectasis. That's how you can look at emphysema. And you can take that to lots of other places. You can take that to cancer. You can take that same cell. When you go for a biopsy, ladies, when you do a cervical biopsy and they tell you you have cervical dysplasia, or there's a little growth in the cell and they tell you, don't worry, it's benign. That cell is dysplastic. It has responded to a multitude of stresses that you try to identify and eliminate, and it's changed its form, its histology. The way normal looks is called the histology of the cell. And when that histology shifts to stress, it becomes dysplastic. Different levels of dysplasia, all the way in cancer to anaplasia. So we can take that. We can do this all the time. Really, if we had a higher science, if we had a higher technology, we could pull out cells all over the place and determine on what scale have they become dysplastic. Are they just showing shifts and changes that represent a little stress, or are we getting to stresses that are ultimately going to become so drastic that we're going to lose massive function? Are we going to lose the ability to replicate as a cell correctly? Are we going to take the damage to the DNA? Now, the DNA is right in the center of the cell. So if you think of the cell as a grape, and the stressors start to affect the seed of the grape, they've got to get through the membrane. They've got to deal with all the safeguards in the cytoplasm or in the pulp of the grape. All the little things, all right, that the divine put there, that God put there to block those stresses. And did those stresses get into the seed of the cell? the core of the cell, the DNA of the cell. Once they get into the DNA of the cell, now they've gotten into the central junction box. And it can go so far as to begin to affect the replication of the cell. The undisciplined replication of the cell is what we call cancer. And when we look at a cell that's malignant, we don't call it dysplastic. We call it anaplastic. Anaplasia, the degree of morphing of the cell, has hit a whole other level. And we have big problems. And we can back out of cancer, and we can just take a look at food allergies. You say you have a food allergy. It's the same process. A food is being ingested, and that food is too difficult to digest for all the reasons we discuss. And larger molecular configurations of that food is getting into the bloodstream. And once it gets into the bloodstream, bigger and larger in its molecular structure, or different in its molecular structure than it's supposed to be, the immune system sees it, and we begin the inflammatory response, thus the rashes, thus the pain, the foggy headedness, so on and so forth. Anything you call a food allergy is, again, an adaptation to a situation where the brain, the high intelligence of the body, sees in the blood things that are not supposed to be there. And it alerts the police, so to speak. A red flag goes down. Problem. Arthritic pain. When you go to the doctor and they tell you that you've got these spurs, these bone spurs in your neck that are pressing into the spinal cord, and that may need excision, surgery, fusion, spurs in the knee, the vertebra of the low back. When you've got arthritic pain from spurs, osteophytes, one great way to build an osteophyte is to throw off the natural biomechanics of the body. Now, in Dynamic Exercise, one of my past shows, we discussed bodily biomechanics. Go listen to that show again. StraightTalk.cc. That's StraightTalk.cc. And if you're listening on the radio, or rather, if you're listening off the computer, if you're streaming the show and you like the show, go to Facebook and say you like the show. Also, go to the homepage, everybody, if you can, and make comment. And after the show today, as always, if you're new to the show, at 11 o'clock, I get on the phone. I'll spend an hour or so with people, and then we'll get back in touch Monday night from 7 to 9 if we can't get to you today. And if not, then if you call in the next week, my board op will put you at the top of the list, so we cycle people through so we can get to everybody. And I do a show like this because I constantly hear, and I see in my own practices, consistently I see, problems with people's perspective on healing. How they respond to the healing is what becomes the new disease. How they respond to the healing becomes the new problem. So, we have a host of problems, in this case, arthritic spurs. Arthritic spurs from faulty alignment. Why are we growing a bone spur? Why are we growing a bone spur? We grow a bone spur because we can't stabilize the spine. We grow a bone spur because the spine doesn't have the right alignment. And when it doesn't have the right alignment, what happens is the body has to figure out a way to realign or to stabilize its alignment. The stabilization of the body, because the alignment is off, is what demands the growth of the bone spur. And then finally, that bone spur gets in the way. And it starts to go into certain tissues it shouldn't have to go into. We call that what? We call that arthritis. We call that the beginning of degenerative inflammatory arthritis. Again, it's just an adaptation. Tachycardia, high blood pressure. If you need to increase the beat of your heart, as in tachycardia, you also need to increase your blood pressure. We do that all the time in response to crazy days. There's a fire, you've got to run. You're late for work, you've got to run. Something happens that's stressful, and you have to act quickly. And so what did the body evolve to understand? That it's got to increase the beat of the heart, constrict the arteries. And that's good. That's healthy. If it didn't do that, you could not respond to stress. So what we call heart palpitations or increased heartbeat, what we call high blood pressure, is a blessing. That's an adaptation. That's a response that was put there for us to thrive as a population. But when that very same situation that causes the heart to beat fast, that causes the artery to constrict and increase the blood pressure, when the body has to do it too many times, it's being forced now to adapt unfairly. You can look at it that way. It's being forced to adapt unfairly. And as it adapts unfairly, meaning the heart increases its beat and the arteries constrict and the blood pressure goes up, if it happens too many times, if the adaptation is unfair, then the body shifts tracks. It begins to stay in that highly adapted state. So then when you go home at night to relax, your blood pressure doesn't come down. When you go to the doctor and you're relatively relaxed and you're simply being asked to relax and have your blood pressure taken, your body is still in speed-up mode. So what's high blood pressure? It's a message from your body, just like lung disease is a message from your body, just like dysplasias all the way to cancer, just like food allergies, just like arthritis, just like depression. Just like mental illness, just like autoimmune disease, just like bipolar disorder, just like Crohn's disease, IBS, you name it. The body's simply saying, hey, let me show you how you've asked me to adapt. And now I'm going to give you a symptom. And you have to take that and understand what I'm saying to you. So high blood pressure, one of the leading causes of medication, one of the most common things that people deal with, is simply constant, inappropriate vasoconstriction of arteries that should be vasodilating. It's just they've been asked to adapt, and that adaptation is inappropriate if it's adapting all the time. It finally solves its problem by staying in that mode. If you trigger something so many times a certain way, it stays that way. See, these are dynamic systems. The body is a dynamic system. Dynamic means it's constantly communicating. It's its own intelligence. There's you and your conscious perception of a problem, and then there's your body. There's two people inside you, so to speak. Are you listening? Because the internal you is talking to you and saying, we have a beautifully designed system. God designed a magnificent system. A miracle it is. Are you on the outside listening? Which you will prevail. And this is why discussions like this are not really philosophic. They're practical. because it's perception of process that determines whether or not you heal. We know enough about healing, tons of things now. Many doctors know enough about how to heal tons of things. The literature is out there. There's nothing you can't get, no matter where you live. But that doesn't mean you'll heal. Because now we've got so much data and so much information that it's easy to lose perspective. Functional perspective. Not theoretical perspective. You need something that'll stick to your ribs when it starts to rain. But we get is we get a weaker perspective. We get a label. What we get when you come in with problems like this is a diagnosis of exclusion. So let me introduce a term here. Diagnosis of exclusion. You know what that is? It's a diagnosis with a fancy word that tells you what you already know. And we always have that joke. I went to the doctor. I told him my head hurts. He sat, he looked, and he talked, and he tested, and he looked at me seriously and said, Mr. Smith, you have a headache. And we tell that joke in medicine for years, because that's what happens so many times. Fibromyalgia, attention deficit disorder, bipolar disorder, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. I could go on all day. There are simply big terms, medical terms to describe for you what you've already know you've got. When doctors don't know what's wrong, we give it a big name. And then we give it a pill that doesn't respect. It's just an adaptive call. It's an adaptation to a problem, and you're being asked by your body. You're being asked to listen to your body and mount a better adaptative environment. Produce a better adaptation. So look at fibromyalgia. Look at fibromyalgia. With fibromyalgia, huge. This, fibromyalgia came out. If you suffer from this, it's muscular pain of what we call unknown origins. That's nonsense. The muscle is simply a dumping ground. It's a place where the body dumps poisons. I pray for the day when we'll be able to take these tissues and really examine them to see the higher concentrations of garbage in them. The stuff we breathe, the stuff we eat, the stuff we're not getting out of the body faster than we're bringing it in. And to protect the blood, to buffer the blood, to buffer the brain, to protect the more important organs, we dump everything in the musculature. And if you've got a little fat, we dump it in the fat. Now, fat we measure. We know this theory is not a theory. We know the reality of the body with something like fibromyalgia is that the body will dump its poison into the fat first if you've got fat. Body's intelligent. Again, it's this divine system, this beautiful system that you have to honor. And that's where good medicine and good science come from, by honoring what's already there, not by this perversion of trying to intercept or infect a perfect process. We already know the body will dump its poisons into the fat. And if it's out of fat or you don't have fat, it'll dump it in to the muscular system. That's better than dumping it into the brain, and it's better than dumping it into the spinal cord, and it's better than dumping it into the liver and all the important organs, so on, the marrow of the bone. The last place you want to see those poisons go is into your bone marrow, which is fat, which is why very often it goes there, because it's looking for a fat site. But we know fibromyalgia is so largely driven, not solely. So you come in with muscular pain all over your body. They give you the battery of tests. There's no diagnosis to be had. No one respects this. Natural medicine does, fortunately. And then you're simply told you have fibromyalgia, and we don't even know if anything but a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. We can't give you a steroidal anti-inflammatory because that's just not worth what it costs. Not in a case like severe muscular pain making your life impossible to live. Think about that. For fibromyalgia, you're going to get a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, a weaker anti-inflammatory. Because you're only in debilitating pain. You're not in agonizing, life-threatening pain. So we can't give you a steroid. So what does it mean if you're being given a steroid? But in this case, we're going to give you a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, and we're going to give you a diagnosis of exclusion. Instead of a perspective that simply says, understand what the body's trying to tell you. It can't hold poison anymore. Attention deficit disorder. You've got a child that can't sit still, that doesn't seem to concentrate, that can barely read. And you bring your child to the doctor, to the neurologist, et cetera, and they tell you they have attention deficit disorder. Why do we insult people with even that terminology? Or bipolar disorder. These are diagnoses of exclusion. They don't really tell you what's going on or why. They just give you a large term that's just simply a synonym of what you already know. But once again, attention deficit disorder. Did you ever consider your child is bored? He doesn't pay attention because he's bored. He doesn't pay attention because he's so gifted that he sees right through the person that we call the teacher. He sees the teacher's pain. He sees the teacher's humanness. Or he sees the what he calls the futility of the classroom. We all know we've been in those types of classrooms and we've had those types of teachers. God bless them, but nonetheless, we all understand what I'm saying. Maybe some children are just very gifted at figuring that out at 7 years old and they're bored. Whatever the reason behind something like attention deficit disorder, from problems at home, and then the child can't really concentrate in school, to what I just mentioned a moment ago. We're talking about a child, or we're talking about an adult years later, adapting to an environment. How they're perceiving their world creates an adaptive response. It's a perceptual issue. It's not a disease. It's not a problem. And we're going to go in and alter your perception with complete disregard for the genius of the body at work. Gifted children, often very gifted children, and moms and dads, you know how often ADD and bipolar come with very gifted kids. You know your kid is gifted. You watch your kid when your kid's relaxed, as you know your child, and you watch that child do genius things, things of brilliance, and you can't understand it. And then you're told they have ADD. That doesn't mean anything. It means your child is performing brilliantly at adapting to an environment that doesn't work for it. Change the environment. Otherwise, you're left with a diagnosis of exclusion, a weak perspective, no respect for the genius of adaptation. Irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. The number one reason, I think it's the number two reason, each day in the United States that people don't come to work. It used to be low back pain. First one's the flu. The second one is either low back pain or IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Go to any drugstore in this country, anywhere, from the countryside to the most industrialized cities. Walk into the drugstore. You've got 3 to 4 rows of digestive aids. About 25% of every drugstore across America is something to make your digestion improve. Wow. Wow. And you guys certainly know it's not that complicated. And yet people are left with IBS, the new leading cause of digestive disorder in the United States of America, the second or third leading cause of why you don't go to work each day, your home bleeding or whatnot. That's another diagnosis of exclusion. Do you really need to be told you have irritable bowel syndrome or Crohn's when everything you eat causes pain or some sort of gastric problem, and when you go to the bathroom it hurts? Do you really need a name like that? Again, a diagnosis of exclusion. What is the digestive system saying? It's saying it's continually being insulted. Insulted by foods that are not digestible. Insulted by having to digest foods with a shortage of hydrochloric acid, a shortage of bile, a shortage of pancreatic enzyme, a preparation of a food that's just not tenable for the body to digest. And then the nerves pick up on that. All the little nerve endings, the nerve sensors, scan the inside of your intestines, see the mess, and we begin this inflammatory response that can ultimately ulcerate either the small or the large intestine, and we move from IBS into Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. Again, your body is just trying to adapt to what ends up being an inappropriate request. Digest food that's not food anymore. You know, I was talking to my friend the other day. He's a restaurant consultant. And in across the United States, in your most expensive restaurants now, they have this new thing where these chefs, and a chef today running a high-end gourmet restaurant in any one of the major cities can be as early as young as 30 years old. They come out of college, they go to chef school. By the time they're 30, 35, they've got 7, 8, even 10 years under their belt. They know what they're doing. Do you know what one of the biggest trends today in restaurants is? Having the restaurant directly linked to its own farm. There's a chef in the Northeast called Boulé, I believe his name is. Boulé or Boulé. Apologize if I'm not saying that correctly. Boulé owns his own farms. So if you eat in his restaurant, which is it's a 4 or 5 star restaurant in New York City, etc., and he's got his own farm. And so when you eat his tomatoes, when you eat his lettuce, when you eat his lamb, it's all from his own farm. Wow. The air used to be free, and so was the water. And now you know what we're evolving to? If you're rich and you can afford real food, come to my restaurant. Have a steak for $100. Wow. Think about that. You either get Ralph's or a $100 steak at high-end gourmet restaurants. Is that where we're going? In any event, when you eat these farm foods, the healthy ones, the ones I constantly harp on, then your tissues don't need to adapt to the response. Now, you can take this all the way in to the DNA. When the DNA is hit too many times, when what controls cell replication, when what controls your hormonal system, when what controls all the most important functions of your cell, the DNA, when those strands are breaking apart, not repaired because they're hit too many times, the body can respond as adaptive intelligence. And one of the great adaptive intelligences of the DNA, when it's being attacked too much, too fast, too hard, is something called apoptosis. A is an apple, P-T-O-S-I-S, apoptosis. If the DNA gets hit too many times, it will signal apoptosis, which is cell death. The cell, in the name of the higher intelligence of the organ, will finally say, hey, I'm a mess, guys. I can't be part of the group anymore. I'm going to do the noble thing and turn myself in. Because if I don't, we're all going to go down. And we begin to initiate an explosion of cell death. And then we say, you're losing your organ because too many cells are dying. So how would you like to look at the next diagnosis of pending renal failure or pending liver failure? Or you're going to be up for a liver transplant in 10 years, 5 years, from what we can see. As simply your cell, your high intelligence, destroying itself as an adaptive response. That you lose half your renal function may just be an intelligent response on behalf of your intelligent physiology, your intelligent cell, to get rid of the part of the kidney that's just, or the liver, that's just asking for more than it can possibly demand and slowing down the rate of organ failure. How's that one? Try that one on for size. Think about what I'm saying, because that's the reality of the body. Oh, it's being attacked by things that are harming it, and in that it's being harmed, finally these toxins kill the organ system, and then you're in trouble. No, don't buy that. Understand that the cell's response will sequentially, the cell's response to toxin, to infection, will sequentially bring into play more and more radical adaptive response in the interest of preservation. And your job when you're facing that is to look at it that way. And your job when you're facing that is to simply turn that environment around, change the terrain, make it unnecessary for the cell to adapt in the old way because it's got a new environment. Now you get it. I know you got it. I can feel that you get it. All the free radical stuff. When Dr. Marshall says DHLA, yes. Coquinol, yes. CoQ10, yes. That's NeuroND, excuse me. But dihydrolipoic acid, that's the chemical we're talking about. CoQ10, ubiquinone, that's what we're talking about. When we're talking about taking antioxidant, antioxidant is produced by your body in addition to what you take exogenously, meaning from the outside. The purpose is before the adaptive response gets to apoptosis, meaning cell death, before the number of free radicals, the amount of free radical damage. A free radical is a molecular compound that's looking to bind with something because it's not happy, it's not content. Its valence shell is incomplete. It needs an electron to be happy. And so it scans the body, this little super microscopic compound, scanning the body, looking like a hornet, an angry hornet that wants to take a bite out of something. It wants an electron, and it pulls a part of your chemistry into itself, and that damages the tissue. We produce free radicals. And we produce antioxidants. And so when you're taking something like dihydrolipoic acid, that's the NeuroND, or coquinol, that's the CoQ10, into the body, you're trying to neutral and buffer that process. The other perspective is, why are we making so many free radicals? Why are we getting hit with so many free radicals? What is it in the environment that has to shift before the cell has to adapt and start to signal its own destruction? It's a far more exciting, interesting, engaging perspective of why you suffer. That's a lot to hear. Cheers for you if you can hear this show and you're sick. Because that's what having a doctor is about. You have to be in a relationship with somebody. You have to be able to look at them. You have to be able to say, this is a celebration, even though you're in pain. I know it's tough, but I would rather be here with you than anywhere else because you're sincere about bringing up the internal power that God gave you to find solutions, and that the doctor's job is to just to translate those solutions into practical perspectives. You can take that all the way to a healing. Now, detox. Name of this show today is Disease as an Adaptation and Defining Detox. Detox is another vital perspective. So your perspective on disease is critical. Your perspective on what we mean by detox is also critical. And as always, I'm not going to get in all I want to, but we've got a good 7-8 minutes to say some important things about another vital perspective. Again, straighttalk.cc, straighttalk.cc. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. If you get to my website, you can tell me you like the show or whatever you want to say on Facebook. And also, if you get to the homepage of the website, you can comment on the show, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me what you liked or would like to see improved, and we'll always do the best we can. I read everything. But this other vital perspective is detox. And what that means is when you try to make yourself better, you may end up making yourself a little worse for a while. Doctors, natural doctors, holistic doctors, love to throw that one out. Hopefully, most of the time, it is detox. We try to minimize detox. You always try to do that as a doctor. You always try to work gently with somebody. You always try to bring them to a better state without creating headaches and fever and chills and muscular pain and constipation and bloating and gas and diarrhea and terrible skin rashes and nightmares and heart palpitations. And so on and so forth. There's an endless array of responses as you heal that we call detox. And hopefully they are detox. 9 times out of 10, I'll guarantee you they're detox. You may be detoxing too fast. And that's what the doctor's supposed to limit. But the other side of detox, in other words, the rate at which poisons that you need to get out of your body to change the terrain. Now we're putting it together. The rate at which you remove poisons from your blood and your organs that have to get out of your body so that you can change the terrain so that the adaptation can work for you instead of working against you, so that the adaptation can bring you more response or more function rather than less function. The rate at which you get these poisons out of the blood is related to your skin and your bowels and your lymph and your liver, gallbladder, and your kidneys, and even your breath. The organs we call the excretory organs. The show on kidney, right? A few weeks ago. In the sixth grade, we learned the largest organ in the body is the skin. And then later on, hopefully, we learn the skin is the third kidney. Skin needs to be dry brushed. Boar's head bristle, a nice soft natural bristle. In the morning before the shower. And then hopefully you're using a natural soap, a gentle soap, just to rinse off the poison that the dry brushing brought, the dead cells that the dry brushing brought. That's an excretory organ, the skin. And the liver and the kidney. Liver, gallbladder, kidney, lymph, breath, bowels. And if you're pulling these out as fast as the body is downloading them into the blood, you minimize detox. Now, there's lots of variations on that theme. But here's my point today, more than anything else. Detox, meaning those feelings that are not comfortable, are often, in complicated chronic cases, are often inevitable. They are unavoidable. But I'll tell you what makes it worse. What makes it worse when you're detoxing is that you're panicking. That you're calling your doctor 15 times a day that you're running around and you're really panic-stricken because you're not sure you're supposed to feel this way. You're going to feel lousy sometimes. You have to understand, even under the best medicine in the sky. See, holistic medicine's a little guilty here. Holistic medicine's a little guilty. They don't tell you that. They do, but it doesn't sink in. In pharmaceutical medicine, we call it predictable side effects. And every time you take something, they tell you there are predictable side effects. So the side effects are not pleasant, and we try to change the drug if you're having a predictable side effect. And then when we can't change the drug, then we say, as doctors, okay, well, you've got this multiple myeloma. You're going to have to take this particular type of drug, and it's got bad side effects, but cost-benefit, you need to do it because it will preserve your life. There's elegance in that. In holistic medicine, you just do what you do, and then you find out just how bad you're going to detox. So you got to understand, in holistic medicine, a lot of times your perspective on detox has to understand that you're going to do it sometimes. You heal through a stock market graph. And unfortunately, this is where we're going to have to close today. I found this lecture compelling. I hope you have. The stock market graph. Healing is an up and down gradual process that includes basically changing the terrain and at the same time understanding detox. Change the terrain and understand detox. You do that, you've got lots of it figured out. If you miss that, you go into panic. If you live in panic and fear, you're not going to get there. Okay, straighttalk.cc, Dr. Vincent Medici. Get to the website, hear the show again. Tell me if you like it on Facebook and comment on the show. We'll see you next week. Have a fantastic day. God bless.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.